Sports Pro Basketball Talk Podcast. Brett Polakoff here with Kurt Heelan. What is going on, Kurt?
Not much. Thanks for having me. It's just fun to be back doing this, man.
Yeah, it's about time. Month into the season is a good time as any to get back on track here. Looking at Tuesday night, looks like we might get Kevin Durant back on the court for the first time this season. Thunder just 5-12 without him. Is Kevin Durant returning to the lineup at this point in the season soon enough for OKC to make a run and get back into the playoff chase?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. Look, I put this in the a couple places, but I know it was in the power rankings this week. They have to go from here on out 44-21 to get to the 49 wins that was the playoff cutoff last year, and it's going to be in that ballpark again. That's pretty steep, but it's less than their winning percentage last year. It's a little better than 2 out of 3, but it's not even up to the winning percentage they had last year. They can still do this. They can still get into the playoffs as a 7 and become like the world's most dangerous 7 or 8 seed. There's no margin for error for them at this point. Like, they can't have a losing streak now. They've got to be good the rest of the way, but they can do it.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the way Reggie Jackson has improved. You know, that's just another just weapon that makes them, you know, extremely deep. I'm not sure what's going to happen at the end of the season if the Thunder are like looking at a 7 or 8 seed. What's San Antonio going to do? What's Memphis going to do? What's Golden State going to do if they're looking at a potential first round matchup with a, you know, a dominant Thunder team?
Or better yet, a Clippers who've had issues with getting past them in the past, and you know they're playing. You know they've won 7 of 8. The Clippers are starting to look like the Clippers again. If they get back up into one of those top 2 or 3 seeds, it's the exact same thing. They would. It's going to be interesting to watch because you don't want to give up home court, but man, if you could avoid them, not that there's an easy option. The problem is, oh, I really want to avoid Oklahoma City. I'm going to get who? Dallas? I mean, they may be higher too. You're going to get a really good team regardless. There's no easy outs in the West.
Yeah, I mean, you look at Spurs, Thunder, Grizzlies, Clippers, Warriors. I mean, that's right there, that's some pretty dangerous ball clubs.
Yeah, exactly. And there's no easy way. I mean, if you start to look at it, some of these teams like Phoenix and Denver you might aim for, but I don't think that they're going to be, you know, Phoenix is the 8 right now. Denver's and Sacramento and New Orleans are hanging around, but Oklahoma City's going to get in there, probably. They're probably going to shoot up ahead of, you know, I might guess they get ahead of Phoenix and become, but then, I mean, you look at that, the eight teams would be something like Memphis, Golden State, Houston, Portland, San Antonio, Dallas, the Clippers, and Oklahoma City. I mean, that's ridiculous. And I mean, who do you want to face in there? Who's the weakest team, Portland or Houston? Those are good teams.
Well, and the thing is, you know, you kind of need to recalibrate like every 10 days or so. You know, you talked about the Clippers. Yep. They started off slow. You know, now they're, you know, on fire. They're blowing teams out. Their offense is finally coming together. You know, Dallas looked like world beaters earlier in the season with that elite level of offense, and they stumbled a bit. So it really is going to come down to who's clicking the most at the end of the season. And, man, just thinking about the Thunder and, like, the Spurs in a first-round playoff matchup, that is ridiculous.
Yeah, and I think that this conversation gets to the heart of something a lot of people are talking about around the league and been written about by Tom Ziller and Zach Lowe and a bunch of people, which is conference realignment. Look, what are we talking about? We're talking about Phoenix or Oklahoma City as an 8 seed in the West, and the 8 seed in the East is right now it's 10 seed. It's 7-10. Indiana is going to get that spot. Maybe Brooklyn catches them. It's the 10 seed in the West is going to be better than the 7 and 8 seeds in the East easily. And is that fair?
Yeah, you know, the problem is, how do you realign the conferences, right? I mean, the West has been on a run for a lot of years now. It's in the double-digit years where the West has been the dominant conference, had the majority of these good teams. Do you do it by region? Do you mix it up? You know, Mark Cuban's thing of like, well, let's switch out these 4 teams. You know, you'd need to have a lottery in the West of teams begging to, you know, jump to the Eastern Conference if you're trying to do something like that. So I just don't think there's an easy answer. And you know, at the same time, it seems like every season, you know, we're looking for ways to, like, quote-unquote, fix the league. And I don't think the league needs fixing. I don't think we need to look at drastic rule changes. I don't think we need to look at conference realignment. Selecting the top 16 teams in the playoffs regardless of conference, that might be one way to do it. But then again, I don't know how you reward home court advantage with the divisions and the conferences. It just gets a little bit complicated.
It does. Although I've started to come around to the idea of one of the complaints is you've got the unbalanced schedule. The East plays the East right now. The West plays the West. Well, you know what? The West playing the West, they'd still have more teams. They'd still be better off. You know, I think you could almost right now, and it's obviously not going to happen this season, but you could almost right now go without conference realignment and slot somebody like, you know, it would put Phoenix in. It'd be interesting because if you did that, you'd have Denver and Sacramento and Miami, who are all 9-8, and Cleveland, they're 8-7. They'll get past that. Milwaukee's at 10-8 and probably won't hang there. Now all those teams are fighting for the final, you know, 14, 15, 16 slots. And I think that across conference, and I think that gets kind of interesting. And you can argue that, well, it's tough for Sacramento and New Orleans and Denver and these teams because they played the tougher schedule. But, you know, at this point, they're so much the better team, it's not really going to matter.
Well, and see, that's the thing right there is that, you know, you mentioned the schedule aspect. You know, it still doesn't change the fact that those eight teams that you listed off in the West are just a murderer's row. You know, so maybe what you do is you seed the East and the West teams, you know, maybe based on records so that you don't have the Thunder playing the Spurs or the Grizzlies in the first round of the playoffs. Maybe that's what you do. You leave the conferences where they're at, have the top eight in the East make it, have the top eight in the West make it. And then once you do that, then don't seed based on conference, seed on record instead.
Yeah, exactly. Because, I mean, right now, you know, and again, obviously we're less than 20 games into the season, so it's kind of ridiculous. But, I mean, your 4-5 out West is Portland, San Antonio. And your 4-5 out East is Atlanta, Milwaukee.
Slight drop off there in competition level and entertainment value.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, it'd be, on the other hand, this is great for the teams in the West because maybe Portland gets Atlanta in the first round and they find it easier to advance. The West is just going to be, the West is going to be crazy entertaining, and every one of those series is going to be fantastic in the playoffs. I mean, it is going to be must-watch television.
Yeah, we even saw last season, right? You saw that Portland-Houston matchup was insane. It's like Damian Lillard, crazy buzzer beaters, like every single night. Like,
yeah,
the West is much better, but I'm not sure. You know, again, looking at crazy ways to change sort of the history of the game and the way things have been done, I'm just not sure that, you know, a full-blown realignment would necessarily solve things. Anytime you do something like that, you get the dreaded, you know, unintended consequences. It's kind of what the owners were thinking when they didn't vote for the lottery reform proposal this season. You know, did it in response to the Philadelphia tanking, which is sort of, you know, unsavory amongst the league's owners. They don't really like that strategy. But the proposed reform wasn't really the right solution, so it ended up getting voted down. They were worried about, well, how would this affect things? And maybe, you know, jumping to a conclusion too quickly isn't necessarily the best idea.
Yeah, and we'll be talking Sixers with D-Lineham here in a bit. But, I mean, actually, I should stop this. Pause it for a second.
Yeah.
Were we putting her first or his first? Like, all of a sudden I was like...
No, we'll drop it in later.
Okay. Yeah. Because we didn't mention it at the top.
No, so we'll drop it. No, we'll drop it in later. I'll do like an intro, or you did an intro for her, so we're fine.
Well, I did an intro just for her, but we didn't mention it like at the top of the podcast. Keep listening, we'll get to her type of thing.
Yeah.
You know, but if you can drop something like that in, then we're set.
Okay. Yeah, we'll be good.
All right, 3, 2, 1. I'll just go back to that point. Well, and we'll be talking about that with D-Lineham and the tanking issue and stuff, and how they're dealing with that in Philadelphia. But I mean, they're just naked about what they're doing, and they drafted, I mean, this is 2 years in a row they've drafted guys obviously who weren't going to play the next year, and it's an extreme situation where the model is more like what you see in Milwaukee, which is, hey, they didn't think they were going to be bad last year. They ended up being bad, but they've made, and they got Jabari Parker out of that, but they took a gamble, and, you know, Antetokounmpo is turning out to be an absolute stud. You know, they've got some stars, they've got some pieces, and they've turned it around pretty quickly, and they're a potential playoff team now.
Yeah, so what would your solution be on the conference realignment thing? Are you for that, or do you think doing something like I mentioned with, you know, I don't know, seeding based on record once you get to the playoffs, is that maybe a better way to go?
I would try to – the problem here becomes flattening out the schedule a little. Right now you play – if you're in the West, you play 4 games against each of the teams in the West and 2 against each of the teams in the East, roughly. It doesn't shake out perfectly, but that's the rough model. you'd have to flatten that out a little, but you don't want to add a lot of travel. You certainly don't want to mess with the rivalries and the natural, like, you know, if you're in Los Angeles, you're California, the Lakers should play the Clippers and the Kings and the Warriors a little more and keep some of that travel cost down and not just make an extra trip out east. And I don't really mind that for the playoffs. I, you know, some people talked about there being a lot more, if you seeded like that, there'd be a lot more travel in the playoffs. That doesn't bother me, but I'm with you. If I'm going to do this, I might try to flatten out the schedule a little, but essentially I'm just taking the top 16 teams. I'm just putting them in there and then seeding them regardless of record. So that, yeah, Toronto and Washington and, you know, Chicago will probably be up there. They'll end up with pretty good seeds. I you know, that's fine. They've earned it. And then you go down. And so that if you are, you know, whoever's going to have the top seed out West, Golden State or San Antonio or whoever ends up with it, Memphis, they should be rewarded with a relatively soft game. But that soft game shouldn't necessarily be Indiana. You know, if they get – if that 8 seed is now somebody like – or that 16 seed is somebody like – Phoenix or Sacramento, you're going to have to work. I mean, it's a winnable series, a very winnable series, but you're going to have to work a little more than you would with what's left of the Pacers.
Yeah, it'll definitely be interesting to see if all the conjecture, you know, actually leads to any change or, you know, Adam Silver obviously seems...
This is so, I will say this after having talked to one person to leave, this is so far away. Like, they're like, we've talked about it, but in a very theoretical sense. It's something some owners... Particularly owners in the West right now, you know, you mentioned Cuban brought it up. It's the guys in the West who are bringing it up because, like we said, you know, somebody with 47, 46 wins is going to be the 10 seed out West. It's you know, you're going to have a really nice season and not even be close to making, you know, the playoffs. It's not really fair. And so they're coming up with the plans right now, but it's not going to – it's, you know, it's not necessarily in the self-interest of a lot of teams to do this.
Yeah, you know, Adam Silver obviously seems very open into making changes. You know, he's draft lottery reform we talked about. He's investigating heavily into putting together some type of midseason tournament. Unclear what the stakes would be, if that would maybe affect the draft lottery. I mean, my idea on that is, you know, make the winner of that tournament, you know, get a top seed in the lottery or the top odds in the lottery, because then the Sixers wouldn't be able to tank because they wouldn't be able to field a team that could compete in that midseason tournament. It would solve the tanking issue altogether. You know, obviously that's a long ways away as well, but you know, Silver's been open to making changes. I just think the conference issue, it's too big. And like you said, it's a long ways off. The owners and the league are not going to make a change like that, you know, without doing some serious research into what the overall effects might be.
Yeah, exactly. And that'll take, and as we saw with the lottery, that's just going to take time.
Well, you know, looking at the conferences right now, who's your pick for the team that's been the best? Let's start off in the East. Who's been the best team in the East at this point in the season?
You know, let's put it this way. I think Toronto's been the best team, but they've had certain advantages in terms of just being home a lot. I got to see them in person without DeMar DeRozan, and they're going to struggle a little without him. As I put it to a few people, this is a team built on six guys scoring 9.5 points a game, coming at you a lot of different ways with a lot of, you know, a balanced attack. And now without DeMar DeRozan for probably 6 to 8 weeks, that's a key Jenga piece that gets pulled out, and they're just not the same. You know, they're not nearly as stable and dangerous. I think they slide back. I'll tell you who I think is the best team in the East right now, and that's who I picked before the season, though. It's Chicago. When they get, I mean, they're 11-6 having not had Rose and been without Pau Gasol and all that. They're 5-0 when their starters play, and their starters are plus 28.7 points per 100 when those five are on the court. I think if they can, you know, it's what we've said about them all along. If they're healthy, man, that's a good team.
I agree 100% on the Bulls. Got to look at them in person on Sunday against the Nets, and obviously the Nets are terrible right now, really struggling to find their way, but the flashes that you see from that Bulls team, Taj Gibson didn't even play in that one, and the Bulls were able to get up by as many as 20 in the second half because, you know, Jimmy Butler's just been ridiculous. I wrote a longer thing on him today. His improvement has been, you know, sensational. He's fourth in the league in free throw attempts per game, behind only like Kobe Bryant, Dwight Howard, and James Harden. I mean, that's how unguardable he's become on the offensive end of the floor, and we already know he's an elite defender. So, you know, his improvement has been huge. And, you know, really, you look at that team, they added Pau Gasol, who's, you know, one of the most professional players, you know, in the league, has been for years. He's finally being utilized properly, you know, the way he wasn't the last few seasons in Los Angeles, and you're seeing the results. He's going to be an all-star again this season. He's been fantastic. Thibodeau always has that team competing at the highest level. And then you look around the locker room, that's a tight team. There's chemistry there. There's a lot of respect. Everybody works hard. And I just couldn't agree more. I'm super impressed by the Chicago Bulls now. Obviously, the Cavaliers, through the course of the season, they're going to come together a little bit, and they're going to be tough just because of the weapons on that team. But really like what I'm seeing out of Chicago so far.
You know, and what look, Chicago has their identity, which I think is what sets them apart from Cleveland right now, at least. And like you said, Cleveland will get there. Look, Toronto and Washington, to me, are A-minus teams. They are good teams that if the Bulls and Cavaliers aren't playing at their peak, I think Washington in particular, if they have a healthy Nene, can do a lot of damage. But I don't think they can beat peak Bulls or peak Cavaliers should we get to see peak Cavaliers this season.
Yeah, you mentioned Washington and healthy Nene. When do we ever get healthy Nene for an extended period of time? That's the problem.
It's that he's got that plantar fasciitis thing really badly. It's bothered him his whole career, and they really just have to rest him during the season because their defense is so much better when he's on the court. And if he's on the court defending and John Wall's being John Wall, I think they're probably a little better than Toronto at their peak. They've got to find a way to get that team there for the playoffs.
Well, we're very fortunate to have with us Dean Lynam of CSN Philly, who is somebody who's watched the Sixers for years, back when they were at their peak, and now when they're not so much at their peak, I guess, is to put it politely. Thanks for coming on with us.
That would be a polite way of putting 0-17.
Yeah, it's been rough. I'm curious. I think there's two parts of this to me. Like, the first part is, in the locker room, how are the guys dealing with this? Is it kind of getting overwhelming, or they played well against the Spurs. They fought back.
Yeah, they have been in more games of late than not. Obviously, when they got beat by 53 in Dallas, they got beat by 32 in Toronto. You know, those are difficult games, but you know, when they're in games like they were against the Spurs, obviously it's better, you know, to watch a more competitive game. How are they? I mean, these are the youngest, it's the youngest roster I've ever covered in covering any NBA season. You know, most of them, with the exception of Luke Bamute, who I think is 28, the rest of them are all under 25 years old, and there's probably six of them that are 20 or 21.
Wow. And so this is just all kind of a new experience for them, period.
I think a lot of them, you know, understand that they probably wouldn't have a job in the NBA. You know, they're trying to fight to show that they belong in this league. It's not on this roster, somebody else's roster somewhere down the road, but they wouldn't be given the opportunity in the same way that they are here in terms of playing time and what have you, because they are inexperienced and young. So I think they look at it as an opportunity. You know, Brett Brown says all the time, we're trying to, you know, develop and grow, you know, players. And I don't think he would be the first to tell you that he did not see this second year in the rebuild process like what it is right now. And obviously most of that changed when they decided to draft two guys, two lottery picks, that neither of them are playing for you right now.
Yeah. Well, there's been a few guys they've found that have been pretty good. I mean, KJ McDaniels is catching a lot of people's eyes. He's you know, kind of had an ugly situation in Oklahoma City, but he's played really well for them.
He's played excellent for them. He was taken with the 32nd overall pick. A lot of times you would say, you know, those early second round guys are, you know, could have been first round picks, so to speak, and somehow they slipped, you know, to the early second round. You know, he was the best defensive player in, you know, at Clemson last year. I think you see that. He's incredibly athletic. I think the thing that he has surprised people with is the fact that he's actually a better shooter than anybody would have given him credit. He actually, I think he is second among all rookies from 3-point percentage. He's shooting better than 40% from three. So He's been a pleasant surprise. He gets minutes now. I would say he's definitely one of the top five rookies in the league, for sure.
Hey, D, you know, Brett Brown is obviously doing a great job, you know, sort of keeping these guys focused on the task at hand, which is obviously, you know, competing on a nightly basis. I'm curious what you think the challenge he'll be facing as the season goes on. You know, eventually the Sixers are obviously going to win a game or two or three. What happens as we get to the later part of the year when, you know, there's really nothing left to play for and the losing, you know, has gotten, you know, really started to weigh on these guys after 4 or 5 months?
Well, I think that's kind of what they try to tell you, the reason that they have not brought in many veterans, which I always think veterans show guys like the Michael Carter Williams, the Nerlens Noel, you know, show them how and what it's like to be professional day in and day out, 82 games a year, what it takes. You know, Tim Duncan didn't play last night, but he was the first guy off the bus and he's the first guy on the floor still going through his warm-up, even though he wasn't going to play. And, you know, that guy's 38 years old. So I think veterans do show guys this is how you get it done in this league. But by the same token, they're the ones who probably the losing would wear on them more. And it's a, you know, Brett's asked this a lot of times. And obviously the media throng grows when more and more records are at stake. And he gets asked these questions a lot. And one of the things is, how do you make it to losing is not acceptable? And, you know, it's a legitimate, fair question. And, you know, that's where he kind of, Jason Richardson doesn't play right now because he's injured, but he and Lupa Amute are the two guys that Brett leans on to say, you know, we want to make this a positive environment. We want to win. You know, this is not acceptable to lose. We go out wanting to win, thinking we can win. But by the same token, you know, if these guys have only ever been in this environment, we'll see what happens as you go further down the road and how many losses have mounted. I mean, keep in mind, last year they went through 26 consecutive losses as well. So this is not totally new for a handful of them.
In Brett Brown's case, his job is good, right? I mean, he knew going in, they knew going in that this was kind of how it was going to go. I don't think they're laying this at his feet, right?
No, not right now. No. Meaning, yes, he's fine right now.
Cool.
He will be fine definitely for this year.
I think Brett Brown, you know, he kind of has a dream job, doesn't he, a little bit? I mean, despite all the losing, you're talking about a guy that really gets to coach in the purest sense of the word because he has a bunch of young guys. There's no egos involved at this point, and there's zero expectations to win right now. So isn't he kind of in a great situation, at least in the first couple of years of this rebuild?
I wouldn't call any part of this a dream job. There's just no way. Because by the nature of being in sports, competition is what it's about. And, you know, the best of the best. This man was 12 consecutive years with the Spurs, won more than 50 games every year. There is no part of this, no matter who you are, and you think, like, I mean, you walk down the street, even people who, some of them understand the rebuild, but there's plenty of people who are like, this is ridiculous. And he takes the brunt of that every day. He's the face of basically this franchise at this point. So, I mean, I guess I understand what you're trying to say in terms, but I don't know anybody who would say it's a dream job to be 0-17 and not knowing when your next win is coming.
Fair enough.
Yeah, you started to bring up the other part of this to me, the second side of this, which is both, how are the fans? I mean, I've talked to a lot of fans who seem to be down with this, but I know that you've done a story that at CSN Philly about some who are not. And the second part of that is just the business side. I mean, are they selling seats? Are they sponsors coming in? Are they able to handle this financially while they are terrible for not only this year, but likely next year?
Well, I will say that the fans that do come, I will tell you, have been quite supportive in the arena, which is a credit to them, quite frankly. I will say, compared to last year when everybody was on board with, you know, blow it up, we're tired of being mediocre, which I say to myself, that's funny. Just a couple of years ago, they were one win away from being in the Eastern Conference Finals. You know, they lost a game 7 to Boston in Boston, and, you know, it was a competitive game. And, you know, then one bad move with a guy who, Andrew Bynum, you know, had a bad knee, basically ruined everything for, you know, this. So people were like, you know, we love blowing it up. Sam Hinkie's a genius. But the second year being worse than last year, because usually a rebuild goes up, not backwards again. And some definite have fallen off just because, you know, it is significant. And, you know, the competition is, you know, it's just not a roster that is built to be able to win night in and night out in the NBA. That's just true.
Yeah, it's not always fun to watch, I think, for those of us here,
yesterday's first half was horrible. Yeah. You know, and then you get the questions where, like, Dirk Nowitzki, he sat the other night. Now, again, it was a back-to-back, and they got in at 3 in the morning from Toronto. Obviously, Tim Duncan and Tony Parker did not play last night. Parker has injured ribs. You know, Duncan, as I mentioned, is 38 years old. Dirk's 36, so I actually don't think there's anything wrong with those guys not playing in those situations, because those rosters are built to be playing in June as well. And if you want to be playing in June, like Spurs did last year, and win it all and play the way they did against Miami, well, if resting a Tim Duncan on a back-to-back is necessary, then I totally agree with it.
So how are you?
You know, it comes up as a question when it repeatedly seems like teams come in and don't have to play their guys because you are 0-17.
Yeah, and the fans aren't going to love that, because part of the reason you're paying to see this is you're paying to see Dirk and Tim.
Correct.
and
all that. That becomes a bigger topic for, you know, the league and Adam Silver in particular to, you know, address if he thinks it needs addressing or not.
Yeah, and like he said, he said when asked something about this recently, which was, what am I supposed to do now? There's not much he can do in season. This is what it is. The owners chose not to tweak the lottery system. There's not much else he can do.
Right. And I think I understand why, you know, they kind of rallied the troops right before. I think it looked like that was going to change, meaning the draft lottery process. And then people were like, wait a minute, are we jumping too fast? Have we really thought about who is affected? And are we only, you know, affecting the team that needs to be affected? And you are. You're affecting others as well. So, you know, the term that gets used a lot right now is this is an extreme case. You know, it has not been done like this before. And maybe it works out. And, you know, Brett Brown in year 4 has a competitive team that they have grown from, you know, their own picks, their own doing, from their own work. And nobody will, you know, think that these 2 seasons were all that terrible. But you have to have the right picks. You have to make the right moves. And, you know, hopefully you become attractive to free agents at that point, because I don't think you can just do it by the draft alone.
No, I think even the best teams always kind of filled in around the guys they got.
Filling the gaps, absolutely. Yeah. And right now, part of the thing is they have too many of the people that they're looking at play the same position. Eventually, you do have to have a roster where people complement one another. You cannot have the same guys because there isn't places for them on the court.
Yeah, it's been a mess. I've said all along that, you know, Sam Hinkie will either be thought of as a genius or vilified in 2018, but we don't really know the answer till about then.
Nobody does.
Yeah. So one last thing. How hard is it as a person who gets, even if you are getting paid to do this, to go watch the games every night?
Yeah, you know what? I don't mind it. I mean, obviously, somebody would ask me and say, is it good basketball? Of course, there's stretches of it's not good basketball. They are a team that struggles to score, which is the entertaining part of basketball. So that part, obviously the train wreck in Dallas was horrible, but it's the same thing as you're driving along the freeway. If there's an accident on the side, you know, I find myself, I look. So it's a, you know, a similar thing. You're like wondering, when is that first one going to come? How is it going to come about? who's going to be, you know, the person who they do beat, and how did they accomplish it? So, you know, you always find something interesting in your job.
Well, thanks again for the time and talking with us about the Sixers and the fan base there. And hopefully we'll do it later on when things are looking a little better.
When things are better. Absolutely. Thank you.
Well, what about the Western Conference? Obviously, we mentioned a lot of the top teams there. Who do you think's been the best in the West to this point in the season?
I think the best team in the NBA has been Golden State. I mean, not only have they won 9 in a row, and there's a lot of people in Memphis like, hey, what about us? Memphis is playing fantastic, but Golden State is playing the best defense in the NBA, and their offense is still finding its way a little bit under what Steve Kerr is trying to do. But his sets, Brett, you've seen them. That's so much better than what Mark Jackson was running. I mean, just he's using Curry off the ball. He's using guys in much better spots, and as they're getting comfortable in that offense, just guys are put in better spots to succeed, more comfortable spots for them, as opposed to just Curry pounding the ball and the kind of simpler stuff that Jackson was running. As they really get comfortable and get flowing, I think their offense is going to pick up. And as long as they're defending like this, and as long as Bogut's healthy, I think they're legit title contenders.
Yeah, they've looked fantastic at this point of the season. You know, you mentioned Memphis. How much has Marc Gasol improved? I mean, the guy looks like he's lost like 30 pounds, you know, from last season. He looks shredded, and he's just been playing at, you know, ridiculous levels so far.
Yeah, he's been fantastic to watch. I mean, and it was always... You know, what's fun about his game is that it's such a smart game, and that you know, he won Defensive Player of the Year a couple years ago. It wasn't because he's flying in from the weak side like Serge Ibaka, you know, launching balls. He anticipates so well. He sees things so well. It's such a chess game for him, and he's a couple moves ahead. And there are other guys, you know, Kobe will do this when he's on in passing, and other guys in the league can too. But Gasol's just tearing it up right now. He's got that mid-range jumper. He can shoot the ball. If you come out on him, he's passing. He can do just a little bit of – he can do everything well. It's such a well-rounded game. And, they've been fantastic. And and that's another team that's defending really well to start the season.
Well, and just like every year, we haven't mentioned the San Antonio Spurs,
yeah,
right? And yet, you know, they – when they play all their guys, when they're healthy, they've been winning games by 20 points. You know, they look as good as ever. What have you seen out of the Spurs this season? Same old consistency?
Yeah, well, you know what I saw? They're still finding the way a little bit, too. And Thiago Splitter's not back, so they're lacking their presence in the paint. And it was interesting because I saw them in person, and Greg Popovich started talking about, look, you can't come back and just build from where you were. You'd like to think that, hey, we left off at this level. We'll come back to training camp pretty much, you know, go through training camp. We'll be back at that level and we'll build up. That's not how it's worked. You start from the ground up. You have to rebuild the whole scaffolding, the whole structure every year. It's not that simple as just kind of picking up where you left off, and that's what they're going through. That said, what I saw in person was that, you know, they've struggled with some things. They had some missed plays early, and then it got to those final 5 minutes of the game, and they executed. It just at a level off the ball and on the ball, just doing all the little things that nobody else in the league does as consistently, and they beat teams that way. And I don't, you know, Popovich talked about it. He said, I don't think this group at this age could possibly play better than we did those final three games against Miami. Like, that's as good as we can play, and I would be happy to just get back to that level and see if somebody can beat it.
Yeah, I don't think anybody can beat it. I mean, that's some of the best offensive basketball that we've seen in years in those finals, the way the Spurs, you know, you mentioned their execution. I mean, that was team offensive basketball, you know, the likes of which we almost never see, and it absolutely just crushed, you know, that Heat team. And I think Popovich is right. If they could get anywhere near that this season, you know, they're going to be very difficult to deal with once the playoffs are upon us.
Well, the only and again, I think the only teams that could give them trouble and beat them if they're playing anywhere near that are in the West.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe Chicago would be interesting.
Well, see, Chicago, I think, has the defensive tools to be able to disrupt all that.
Their length of the way they played, that would be a fun chess match of a series.
All right, well, that's all the time we have for this week. Good to be back on with you, my man, and we'll look forward to getting it done again next week.
Sounds good. I'm looking forward to it. Thanks.